I'll just read you the introduction. It's introducing lectures, number one, on Monday, the 24th of June, 1946. So, not to take this, don't have to take this down. The first speaker is the Honourable Mr. Justice Atkinson, and then it is Mr. Edmund, the then President of the Institute. So, just get my breath back, take a slurp of my tea, and we'll be ready. Oops, get my right stopwatch out. Okay then. Obviously, I'm not putting the speakers' names in as I didn't in that other one. So we go straight into the to the address. Ready. Mr. President and gentlemen, I have been asked, and I take as a great compliment, just to come to this first lecture and say a word or two by way of introduction. I suppose that legal reporting must be one of the two biggest branches of the work of shorthand writers. I do not know whether Parliament or the law courts makes the biggest demand upon your resources, but at any rate, the law courts make a great demand, which is constant and regular, and, I hope, remunerative. And I should like, with the utmost sincerity, to congratulate the man, whoever he was, who conceived the idea of these lectures, and also to congratulate those who arranged this most attractive syllabus. The subjects of the lectures and the names of the lecturers who have promised to give them really do indicate that you are going to have a most interesting and valuable course of lectures. I think it must be extremely difficult for people without much experience to take up a branch of reporting where all sorts of expressions and words and terms are used with which they are wholly unfamiliar. In an amateur sort of way, I have written shorthand for over 50 years, but I know quite well that I should be completely up a gum tree if I had to try and report some debate upon some technical matter, some medical matter, or some engineering matter, where all sorts of terms were used which I had never before had occasion to put into shorthand, and therefore I do appreciate the difficulties of work of that nature. There are just two hints that I want to give you, and then I will make way for your president. They are hints which I give from the point of view of a judge. We judges only get transcripts of our judgments to revise when they are going to be reported in one or other of the series of law reports. But that does give us an opportunity of seeing some of the mistakes which are made. The great bulk of the transcripts of our judgments we never see, because the transcripts are taken for the purpose of the parties going to the Court of Appeal, and the judgments do not come to us at all. But I know that we very often rather shudder to think what they will read like, especially when they have not been carefully prepared. The two hints that I want to give you are based upon what I have seen in transcripts that I have had. I dare say most of those that we get come from people who report for the law reports and the other reports, and not from shorthand writers at all. But I have no doubt that there is a tendency for everybody to make the same sort of mistakes. To begin with, it is very easy to mishear what he said when counsel and the witness and the judge, perhaps all, are talking at the same time, and the shorthand writer may write down something which is absolute nonsense. And so the first hint that I want to give you is, when you come to transcribe, never write down anything that is nonsense. It cannot be right. Make a guess, if you like, but at any rate, do try and get at what the speaker was meaning to say as best you can, and do your best with it. In all probability, you will be quite right if you do that. But you cannot be right if you put down something which is not sense. That is the first hint. The next one is this. There are very few judges who can give a judgment right away that will be perfect. I think that not many judges can give a judgment straight away so that it is all beautifully grammatical, with every sentence perfectly finished and correct. If you are content to give an absolutely verbatim transcript of whatever a judge has said, there will be a good deal of bad grammar in it, and you can be a great help to the judge there. It is quite easy, if you take a little trouble when you come to transcribe your notes, to try and make what a judge has said grammatical, because I'm perfectly certain that, speaking for myself, I'm hopelessly ungrammatical when I have to give a judgment without much opportunity of considering it or preparing it. Those are the only two hints that I have to give from a judge's point of view. Never attribute nonsense to a judge, because he would not like it. And the more bad grammar you can eliminate from your transcript, the more he will be obliged to you. With those few remarks, I will call upon your president to give you the inaugural address. I do not know what he is going to talk about, but I'm sure it will be interesting. His lordship has gone, but I should like to say something which I should have preferred to say in his presence. That is that I want in your name to express our deep gratitude to his lordship for coming here this evening. Not only do we regard his presence here as an honour, but we regard it also as an indication of the kindly interest that judges take in our work. As I look around this court today, some of you appear to be rather experienced trainees, and you will understand that I am not addressing you at all. I am only addressing those who are genuine bona fide trainees. I have come here this afternoon, as all of your lecturers will do, to try and help you in your work and in your training, if possible. When we look at this list of lectures for the future, I'm sure we all appreciate what His Lordship has said about them, and I hope that I shall not be thought to be impertinent or fulsome if I say that it would be impossible to select any gentleman better qualified to give these lectures than the lecturers who are going to speak to you on the different subjects in the future. They are all experts and the very best authorities upon their particular subjects. That is a very great advantage which you trainees are going to have, an advantage which I may say we in our time never had, and it may be that some of our faults may be attributed to that and may be excused on that score. During the war years we could have done with your help. We have been very short of workers in this occupation, and we still are, but we appreciate that many of you were engaged in work of very great public importance. That work you have brought to a successful conclusion, and now that you have sheathed the sword and are taking in its place the pen, and we are told that the pen is mightier than the sword, I can only hope that you will have the same success in the arts of peace as you have had in war. I therefore welcome you to this occupation and hope that you will be very successful. I think it would be appropriate if I were now to say a few words as to the general nature of our work. I have been taking shorthand notes for more than 30 years. Too many shorthand notes and too many years. And I know that the occupation which you have chosen is not an easy one. It is a hard one. It involves hard and strenuous work. If anybody in this court imagines that the life of a shorthand writer is a life of ease, wandering along the primrose path of dalliance, then I firmly assure that hypothetical person that he is entirely mistaken. The life of a shorthand writer is not a life of ease, but rather one of continuous and unremitting endeavour. There are very great difficulties in the way of a shorthand writer. It is one thing to work hard, it is another thing to run a race. And when you are reporting some speakers, it is running a race. When a shorthand writer does an hour's work, I think it is very often the equivalent of 2 or 3 hours' work in other occupations. You have people who speak extremely rapidly, whose speech is like a rushing wind. It occurs to me that if I were minded to do so, I could mention one or two names in that connection, but I shall endeavour to resist the temptation, great though it is. When those speakers are speaking, my colleagues write at a speed at which one would have thought it was impossible for any human being to write, only to find, to their intense disappointment, that even the impossible is not enough. Then there are people who come into court and cough. What a terrible thing a cough is to a shorthand writer's ear. It just knocks out the salient words in the sentence sometimes, and as his lordship said, you then have to exercise your imagination. Then there are certain wicked and evil-disposed persons who, not having the fear of God before their eyes, but at the instigation of the devil, as they used to say in the old indictment, talk in court. They talk round the shorthand writer. They rattle plans and put every difficulty in his way. During my 30 years as a shorthand writer, I do not mind telling you that there have been times, perhaps moments of undue despondency, when it has seemed to me that on the path which the shorthand writer must tread, the stones are a little rougher and the thorns a little sharper than on other paths, although I fully appreciate that, of course, in every walk of life there are difficulties, there are trials and there are tribulations. There is, of course, the grave difficulty that the shorthand writer cannot work regular hours. There is always the possibility of a transcript being wanted precisely at that time when you have made arrangements for some recreation, for some pleasure or some social visit, or something of that sort. I remember that when I was a boy and first came to into this business, I had many interests. I was a member of an athletic club, and various things of that sort, and I found for myself how bitter it was when you had made an arrangement to find that you could not keep it. His lordship has referred to our remuneration. Substantial increases have been made in the remuneration of shorthand writers during the last 30 years, but leaving entirely out of account the greatly increased burden of income tax. Those increases in remuneration have nothing like equaled the decreased value of money since those days. I have mentioned those matters because I thought it was right to warn you of the difficulties you will find you have to face, and of the bad side of the picture. When I joined this profession, I did so against my father's advice, he being a shorthand writer. But I have not regretted it, because while there are difficulties, and while there are drawbacks, and very serious ones too in our occupation, on the other hand, there are very important compensations and advantages. All standards are comparative. You have to compare our occupation with any other occupation that you might take up, and I think that the work of being a shorthand writer is full of continuous interest. It is intensely interesting work. The law courts are interesting, if you like to make them so. These lecturers, these eminent lawyers who are so kindly coming here in the future to speak to you, are going to make it more interesting to you if they can arouse an interest in the law in your minds. Because I think every wise man will agree with me in saying that one of the great secrets of human happiness is to have a job to do and to enjoy doing it. Personally, I have never subscribed to the foolish and vulgar superstition that the more money you have, the happier you are. That is a mistake, and if you are going to be a shorthand writer, you must make up your mind from the very beginning that you are going to find it interesting and you are going to get the best out of it. Perhaps the more you put into it, the more you will get out of it. These lectures, as I say, can do no more than arouse an interest in the subject in you, and it then depends upon you as to whether you will get the law and other books and study the matter so that you may be acquainted with the subject and understand what is going on in court. I remember many years ago talking to a man a long way from here, and in the course of conversation I mentioned that I worked in the law courts. He said that one day he was in London on an afternoon, had nothing to do, and thought perhaps he would go to a theatre or to a show of some sort, but finally he went to the law courts and listened to the cases. He came to the conclusion that it was the best show in town, completely free, and it was the genuine raw material out of which drama is made. If you were to talk to my colleagues, any of them who are men of experience, they could tell you an amazing story about the interesting things that they have done in the course of their lives. I do not like to tell you my own experiences, because it might seem egotistical, but I cannot tell you the experiences of other shorthand writers, because I do not know them, and therefore I hope you will forgive me if I tell you that in the course of my work as a shorthand writer, I have travelled once to South America, four times to India and Burma, twice to Cyprus, and I have also had various little trips on the continent of Europe, all as part of my work, working my passage, so to speak, on board ship. Some of you may find that sort of thing very interesting, and I think most young men find travel a very interesting and enjoyable thing. Some people say that it expands the mind, and others say it merely extends the scope of conversation. I do not know which of those things is true, but at any rate it is intensely enjoyable. A shorthand writer goes almost everywhere. It is amazing to think of the places in which you could find yourself. You sometimes go to a theatre, and I can assure you that it is a very ticklish job to report the proceedings in a theatre. I remember going on one occasion to a music hall because there was some question of copyright involved. Two men came onto the stage. One of them said to the other, "I was lost in the blizzard on the Yukon Trail." Another replied, pretending to misunderstand, "You lost your gizzard on the Hook and Nail?" That sort of thing went on backwards and forwards at an amazing speed. In fact, it went so fast that I do not think the audience quite followed all the jokes which were made. That is the sort of thing which you have to do in the course of your work as a shorthand writer. Then I remember that on one occasion I reported a speaker who had died many years before, or at least that is what they told me, but even death had not stopped his flow of speech, and he had a great deal to say. He used a medium in order to express his views, and when I produced the transcript in court I was cross-examined about the nature of the next world. Those are just a few indications. As I say, all of my colleagues, if you were to talk to them, would tell you of the amazing and interesting things that they have done. I mentioned these matters to you in introducing these various lectures which are to be given to you, and from which I hope you will derive a very great advantage. And I mention them because I want you to appreciate, as I am sure you do, that in the end you will probably find that you have chosen very wisely in entering such an interesting occupation as this one. For instance, if you talk to the general public, how many persons, laymen, persons who are members of the ordinary public, know anything about the real life of this country? How many of them ever go into a police court? Ask your next-door neighbour if he has ever been to a police court. Let us hope that he has no reason for resenting that inquiry. But apart from that, he probably has never been there. How many people ever go to company meetings? How many people ever go into the House of Lords? How many people attend these historic occasions, which we have to attend from time to time, in which men who are famous all over the world are making speeches and statements which we have to report? How often does the ordinary citizen see and hear these things and know about them? Must not that be a very great education and an experience to us? If we are not educated men, men of wide knowledge and wide interest, then there must be something the matter with us. It must be that we have not taken full advantage of the opportunities which offer themselves to us. I have said that our work is hard and severe, and some of it, I am afraid, is monotonous drudgery. But in addition to that, it is very responsible work. I must emphasise that, because you must realise what a serious thing it is for a shorthand writer to go, for example, to assizes, as young men do. I went to assizes for the first time when I was 19 years old. I think what a responsibility it is to go there and take a shorthand note and produce a transcript in the case of an appeal, a transcript which will go before the Court of Criminal Appeal and be read by the judges. Mr. Justice Atkinson spoke about his judgments. Think of a judge summing up in a criminal case, and the shorthand writer producing a transcript which will be read, every sentence of it, by a keen-eyed lawyer who is intent upon seeing whether there is any sentence in it upon which he can base an argument that the judge has misdirected the jury or failed to direct the jury, and that therefore the conviction must be quashed. When the case comes before the Court of Criminal Appeal, the judges do not ask themselves whether this man is guilty or not guilty. They ask themselves whether this man has received a fair trial according to the rules of criminal procedure in this country. And although the judges may be perfectly certain in their own minds that the man is guilty, they will quash the conviction and set him free if they think he has not received a fair trial. The criminal law in this country is full of safeguards for the accused of criminal offences. How often have I heard and reported judges at assizes saying to the jury that the onus of proof is upon the prosecution all the time. Every man is presumed to be innocent until he is proved to be guilty. And if they have any reasonable doubt about this case, they must say not guilty. That has been said by judges of this country for generations. We take these things for granted, but if we had been defeated in the war, as we nearly were, we should have lost all those things, and we should then have realised how much they mean to us. One of the safeguards of the rights of the citizens, one of the protections which is put there, and is a very valuable one, is that at the end of the trial, every indictable offence, a shorthand writer must be present. He must take a shorthand note of everything that is said, except counsel's speeches, and I suppose they are not thought to be good enough to trouble about, although we sometimes have to take those too. We are part of the protection of the accused man, who is hedged about all the time with rules which we are designed to protect him. Which are designed to protect him. Sorry, misread that last bit.